call to order the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Today is the 16th of February. It is 3 p.m. and we have, or actually it's after 3 p.m., but it's a scheduled 3 o'clock meeting time. And today we'll be conducting a public hearing on House Bill 4040A. So, and that's the only thing that we have scheduled on the agenda for today. I imagine that it will probably take us most of the 2 hours. We have quite a few people signed up both for and against. So let's get started. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 4040A. And perhaps the legislators that are in the room could come forward and kick us off. And then after them, we'll be hearing from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, provide some context to the bill that we're talking about, and then we'll move into panels for and against the legislation. So, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, member of the committees of the committee. For the record, Bill Hansel, State Senator for District 29. District 29 begins at the Hells Canyon on the Idaho border and includes 6 full counties to the west, including Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Morro, Gillam, Sherman, and part of Wasco County. I mention this because this area is home to by far the greatest population of gray wolves in Oregon. I also appreciate the opportunity to go because I've got a subcommittee meeting, Ways and Means, that's meeting at this same time. I testified last week as well as in January to the House Agriculture Committee and briefly provided a history of the Oregon Wolf Plan to the members of the House. I'd like to take a moment and provide the same background as I understand it to be, and if I've got dates or bills, because some of this occurred before I had the privilege of serving in the Senate, perhaps ODF and W can correct that. But as I understand it, the Commission began working on the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan with all parties impacted in November of 2003. It was approved by the Fish and Wildlife Commission in 2005. The legislature then, in 2009, made a few small tweaks to the policy regarding wolves through House Bill 3089B, and then again with House Bill 3452 in 2013. I was the chief sponsor of 3452 and was a co-carrier on the Senate floor with former Senator Jackie Dingfelder. The latest change to the Wolf Plan with HB 3452 passed out of the legislature 58-2 in the House and 30-0 in the Senate. The Wolf Plan, as it was established by the Wolf Advisory Committee, approved by Fish and Wildlife, and in turn the legislature through the 2009 and 2013 bills, included members of the livestock industry, citizens, tribes, conservationists, educators. The plan created a 3-phase implementation program. The legislation I sponsored in 2013 was bipartisan, bicameral, and Governor Kitzhaber signed it into law. Phase 1 established a criteria of 4 breeding pairs for 3 consecutive years. The legislation was drafted for the sole purpose of helping to implement the Wolf Plan while also showing good faith efforts on behalf of the ranchers. Phase 2 called for 5 to 7 breeding pairs as well as the delisting of the gray wolf during Phase 2. This is because there are aspects of Phase 3 that cannot be implemented unless the wolf is delisted. Currently, there are 81 registered official wolves through Fish and Wildlife. However, Wolf Program Coordinator Russ Morgan believes there are well over 100 wolves in the state. This does not include the pups from 2015. Those litters will be incorporated into the official number around sometime during April of 2016. When the Wolf Plan was created, there was an agreement between the ranchers, environmentalists, and ODF&W that when the wolves reached Phase 2, they would be delisted. The decision would be made based upon reviewing the science of whether the wolves should be delisted and a peer review of the conservation efforts ODF&W had made. On November 9, 2015, the Commission voted 4-2 to delist the Canadian gray wolf in Oregon. According to the Oregon Department of Justice, ODF&W met the requirements, including peer review, on what needed to occur in order to move forward with the delisting. It is important to note that this delisting will not bring about senseless violence against wolves. Wolves are still federally protected west of Highway 395. With the Wolf Plan in effect, Phase 3 on the horizon, the wolves will still be protected. Even with delisting, it is still against the law to hunt and kill wolves in Oregon. It is time we honor the plan as was agreed to by all parties. Phase 1 of the Wolf Plan has been a success, and ODFNW has officially delisted the wolf. House Bill 4040A was introduced by the House Agriculture Committee. It states the legislature agrees with ODFNW and the Oregon DOJ that the commission followed what they were supposed to follow. What the bill does is to ratify the decision ODFNW commissioners made on November 9th. By passing this bill, it shows that the department followed the law and every requirement put before them. It is important to notify and clarify that HB 4040A does not legislatively delist the wolf. We have had many examples in the past 10 years of the legislature ratifying decisions and putting said ratification process into statute. I can provide that list to any of you that might want to look at it. Thank you for your time and ability to speak during this hearing, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Senator. Representative.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. Greg Barreto, State Representative, House District 58, serving Wallowa Union and part of Umatilla County. Wolves were introduced into Yellowstone and Idaho in 1994. A little history here. 1994 and 95. By 1999, we had our first documented wolf, B-45, that came from Idaho and was captured by Federal Fish and Wildlife Agency on the Middle Fork of the John Day. In 2000, we had another radio-collared wolf hit and killed on I-84 near Baker City, and then one shot between Ukiah and Pendleton. Oregon had wolves, and they needed a plan. A commission was put together in 2002, and in 2003, the commission agreed to develop the wolf conservation plan by putting together a 14-person panel to develop the plan. The group represented stock growers, environmental community, and ODFNW. A quote from the Wolf Plan: in developing their recommended plan, the committee sought a product that was achievable, realistic, fair, flexible, cost-effective, defensible, sustainable, and fundable, which engaged the public and provided incentives for achieving wolf conservation goals. What the plan achieved from any pro-wolf perspective was nothing short of a great success story. In 2014, there were a minimum of 81 wolves and 10 packs documented in Oregon. The wolf plan that was agreed to had three phases. Phase one was four breeding pair for three consecutive years, and that was the introduction. Phase two was increasing the numbers, seven breeding pair for three consecutive years, and then phase three is management of the species. The wolf must be delisted for the third phase of the plan to be implemented, and that is about a year from now. What ODFNW is now challenged with from one of the parties at the table is that the ODFNW may not have the best science. ODFNW works closely with Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho, as well as Washington and Canada, which has 60,000 wolves. They should, I think, have plenty of science to base their decisions when working with wolf reintroduction. Montana now has a minimum of 627 wolves and 152 packs. Wyoming, outside of Yellowstone, has 195 wolves and 34 packs. And Idaho has a minimum of 846 wolves and 88 packs. Washington has a minimum of 68 wolves. And then in California, they just found two adult males with five pups in Siskiyou County. Oregon's wolf population is growing faster than 20% a year and ahead of earlier projections of growth. This bill is not about pitting one group against another, but allowing a plan, an agreement that was put together after years of negotiation and compromise and then agreed upon by all parties involved and then implemented 10 years ago. This bill does not usurp the authority of the commission. We are simply approving their decision to delist according to the State Endangered Species Act under ORS 496.172, which gives ESA responsibility to the ODFNW Commission, and then ORS 496.176 that allows ODFNW to add or remove any wildlife species. This bill, House Bill 4040, is to ratify the Wolf Plan that is working exceedingly well, so it can continue to be implemented as agreed to. Thank you.
Thank you both. Questions? Yeah, Senator Prasansky.
Thank you. I guess this is really more, Bill, it may be more for you, or either. I'm trying to figure out from what your testimony was as to having a work group that came together with Jackie Dingfelter and coming with the plan. Did that plan actually include that you or whoever would come back to the legislature to actually, let's say, certify whatever decision was made by ODFW to then somehow put it in a statute?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I don't recall that. What I recall was that the original plan had been challenged in court, was in fact hadn't been litigated. They were waiting the judge's decision. The executive department, through their staff, sat down with the environmentalists, the Cattlemen's Association, other interested parties, and worked out an agreement that we then put into law and moved forward with phase one, two, and three.
I appreciate that. If I can follow up, we're in phase two, but nowhere from my research and everyone I've talked to, nowhere has told me that everyone that was in that work group said if phase two was accomplished, then we're going to divert over to the legislature to get some type of certification or ratification of that. So I'm wondering, why are we doing that since it wasn't part of the plan? And if you could also tell me when we as a legislature have ever ratified a delisting decision by ODFW and placed it in statute.
Answer to that question. I'm sorry, I misunderstood what you were getting as to why this was something that we felt that we wanted to do. Let me answer your last question first. I don't know that we've ever done that, but we have done in the past ratified executive department decisions and codified them into law. So the precedent for what has been done, I can get you a list of that. It's a page and a half of different laws over the last 10 years that we've done that. So it's not uncommon to do the process. The specific, I don't know that we've ever had a delisting type of a thing like this before. So it has been done on with the delisting. This would be the first time, but the process is there. The reason why we are attempting to do this, and others will speak to it more frequently, and perhaps Senator DeWitzit, because he had expressed some thoughts of some experience that he had in hearings before as to why this is important to do, is that the plan asks ODFW to do something. We passed it. We asked them to manage the wolves. We asked them to manage the three phases. We set up the criteria for them to do that. They did that. And yet, once again, there are people that were a part of the original plan that want to take them to court because there were things that they didn't care for. They have done that. They have already filed the papers to sue. We're not stopping them to do that at all. But what this is attempt to do with the judiciary, third leg of the three-legged stool, that the executive department and the legislative department are on the same sheet of music. That's the purpose for this bill.
If I can follow up again.
Follow up.
So my understanding is that we've never had a certification or somehow done some type of resolution on a delisting, but this would be our first. The group itself that was part of this came up with a plan with a phase one, phase two, and a phase three. Now we're deviating from that. Have you by chance seen the testimony that has been written and handed in on behalf of Congressman DeFazio that was handed in today? You may not have seen it yet.
I've not seen it, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Denbrough, then Senator Whitson.
Thanks, Chair. Colleagues, so would it be fair to say that the preponderant reason for this bill is to avoid a lawsuit?
Not necessarily. Did you say to prevent the lawsuit or? I'm sorry. What was
to prevent a lawsuit, essentially.
Yeah. No, yes. It's that the plan can continue. Anytime there's litigation, things are slowed down, and The problem here with this wolf issue is the numbers are increasing fairly rapidly over in northeastern Oregon, and a lawsuit right now would slow down the whole process of the plan.
So the preponderant purpose is to keep a lawsuit from slowing down the plan. Would that be fair to say? I mean, you know, and I ask this question, Representative, because you know I've heard you know in the debate on the other side people asserting that this has nothing to do with a lawsuit, and that it's only in order to give ODF&W a pat on the back. Which generally ODF&W deserves our pats whenever we can give them.
Yeah, my understanding, and I'm not an attorney, is that this still doesn't stop their day in court. You know, but what it does do is shores up through legislative process that we are affirming what they decided. The other thing I'd like to mention is I did introduce a bill similar to this last year, knowing that when it came time to delist, that they would get litigated, and so we were trying to get ahead of the game last year. The bill was heard; it wasn't worked in committee, and I think part of the reason, well, there were a couple of reasons. One, there was not a part in the bill that basically said if the numbers went down below phase two levels, would they be delisted? And then, two, I don't think. There was the idea of usurping the responsibility of the commission, and that is not what we really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But we did want the plan to go as it was agreed to where the numbers would not increase to where they became detrimental to the economic activity up in our area.
Yeah, thank you. If I could just follow up. No, I appreciate that. But I do want us to be clear, you know, whether or not we think that we should be acting to avoid a lawsuit or to eliminate a lawsuit, however we feel about that, I think we have to be clear that that's the real purpose of this. And then we can debate that question of whether we should do that. And I ask that just simply because, you know, I did request an amendment that would make a change that would, and this is up on OLIS, it would delete line 7 and insert that 496.1722 is ratified and approved, provided that the administrative rule amendment was adopted in compliance with ORS 496.176 and associated administrative rules. I got an opinion from Maureen McGee that you know, she was happy to write that amendment, she wanted to point out that that, you know, if that amendment, which, you know, essentially is what would to say that a lawsuit is not in order, your amendments, if enacted, would cause the bill to have no legal effect. So it would have the effect, you know, perhaps of saying, you know, whatever it has to say in the whereases, et cetera, but it would not have a legal effect if we changed that. So, you know, the sense that I got from LC is that the fundamental purpose of this bill is to avoid a lawsuit. So it seems to me that should be the you know, the basis of our decision, and we can speak to that.
Yeah. Can I add something to that? Yeah. There has a suit already been filed, and so it's not to prevent because that's already in process.
I was going to say that has never been what you've just described, Senator Dembo, my intent on this bill at all. To stop or avoid a lawsuit. That has already been filed. That is already in the process, and anybody can do that. My intent was to, having asked a department to implement a plan, of which, you know, I was part of developing, that they have done that and that we agree with what they have done. If people want to sue, they'll have that ability to do that. And because they have, then obviously it has the possibility of being used in the court case. But that was not the reason for my filing.
Okay. Yeah, just finally, then perhaps this amendment would be in order. But we can talk about that.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, could you clarify the
difference or similarity between breeding pairs and packs of wolves?
I would rather leave that to Fish and Wildlife because I'm not fully qualified to answer that. However, the breeding pairs, you know, in a pack, there's typically an alpha male and alpha female that are the breeding pair. The packs can have more than that. Most of the other, my understanding is most of the other females that may get bred without the alpha male there to help provide those pups don't live long. So,
So local biologist in Klamath Falls called me on Friday to let me know that there's a wolf on Windy Ridge and Wildcat Ridge. That's important to me because our farm, small ranch, backs up against Windy Ridge and Wildcat Ridge. So, to your knowledge, do wolves kill dogs?
Yes, they kill dogs and they eat them.
That's what I thought. My wife has a dog that she dearly likes. We've always allowed our dogs to run free on our farm. So it appears now that we have a wolf there. We have the opportunity to either keep our dog in a kennel, give our dog away, put a non-climb fence around our entire ranch, or leave our dog vulnerable to being eaten by a wolf for sport. Actually, they're not eaten by a wolf. They kill them for sport. They don't eat them. They don't eat dogs. Leave it at that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Przanski.
So I'm going back to the other questions I heard about kind of affirming that a boy for the ODFW. And I'm kind of concerned about us as a legislature making that some type of a practice. Every time we think an agency does a great job, we're going to run out and get a bill drafted by LC, run it through, stick it into the books. It doesn't seem like that is an appropriate use of our time, our legislative council, or us putting into our statutes. But with that said, it's interesting that I do agree with you that whatever we do isn't going to stop what happens in court. And if the court does, in fact, determine that the delisting was done inappropriately, I'm coming away from some perspective that you're wanting to let the court know, well, we're siding with the agency. It makes no difference. So why are we doing this except for making a change in what the agreement was and trying to fortify something into I guess what I'm going to call more animosity between the parties than instead of letting the process work. If it was properly delisted, so be it. Then phase two has happened, we go to phase three. If it wasn't, then we basically have the agency needing to redo what they did and see whether the criteria is met for a proper delisting. But why are we putting more fuel on a fire of setting up animosities between these groups that appear to work in good faith, but now we, the legislature, are going to throw a curveball by putting something in the statute?
Mr. Chair, I'll take an answer of that. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer or a legal person, and to spar with one of our foremost legal authorities in the Senate is not exactly a level playing field for me, but I'll do my best to speak to that. First of all, I would not agree that everybody's working well in good faith. If that would have happened, in my opinion, we wouldn't have had the lawsuit. It is a fiery deal. It is the second time that people have come to question what ODFW has done. I think it has the potential of being used in court to help shore up that decision. I would never have said it doesn't have any effect or make any difference.
Thank you both.
Follow up.
Senator Whitsitt.
I'm done.
Okay. In the testimony that was heard on this bill, or a similar bill last year, a common theme of the oral testimony from representatives of environmental communities and others was that the Commission and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife were the only bodies qualified to make this determination. And now they have made that determination. The environmental representatives later admitted that the delisting would have no on-the-ground implication immediately for wolves within the next 4 to 5 years, 3 to 4 years. And still, we have a lawsuit that is suggesting that these environmental groups suggested that the Department of Fish and Wildlife biologists were the only ones who could make the decision. They made the decision. Now they're suing them. There's no question. I just wanted to put that on the record.
I have one other question, though, based on that. So looking at Senate Bill or House Bill 4040, we've heard a lot of things about having a short session, bringing in a lot of policy issues that we shouldn't be discussing, and apparently also the issue of the use of a emergency clause. So do either of you want to tell us why, one, we have this bill in front of us in a short session when it could be addressed in 2017, and why do we have Section 2 that is an emergency clause?
We believe that this bill fit within the parameters of the short session. We both introduced it on either side. My bill is dead on the House, on the Senate side, because the committee chair wanted to run it. It's been hasn't had it has moved fairly quickly through. So it was a decision that we made that it fit into the short session. Emergency clause takes effect, that we don't have to wait the 6 months to confirm our support for what was done.
Senator Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, you know, following on what I was saying before, I did also get an email from our legislative counsel, Maureen McGee, about this issue, and I'll have this put on the record. I haven't, but let me just read from it. Legislative ratification of the November 9, 2015 decision in the manner expressed in House Bill 4040 would very likely lead a court to rule in favor of the commission in any current or future challenge, alleging that the commission did not satisfy an element of 496.176 in reaching its November decision. The power to add or remove species to the state lists of threatened or endangered species is a power delegated to the commission by law. The Legislative Assembly has, and always has had, the power to change or limit the scope of that legislative delegation or to override the delegation by making its own decision to legislatively add or remove a species from the lists of threatened or endangered species without following the procedures contained in ORS 496.176. I therefore believe that the substantive provisions of HB 4040 serve to properly and directly ratify an action that the Legislative Assembly could have authorized in the first instance. Because the ratification would not appear to impair an obligation of contract or a vested right, a court would likely conclude that the legislative ratification cures any real or perceived procedural irregularity in the Commission's decision to delist the gray wolf. So, you know, essentially, you know, as I understand it, the suit is being brought forward because the plaintiffs question the process or the validity of the science that was used in the process. And essentially what we're being asked to do here is to say, no, we believe the science was right. We believe that the process was right and the scientific methodology was without flaw. I don't know how many of us legislators really can say that, you know, to be honest. So I am really troubled with this route, which, you know, essentially is kind of second guessing. You know, I mean, we're Dr. Whitsitt is, you know, perhaps he has qualifications in this area, but I think most of us, and I wouldn't necessarily delegate my vote to him on this issue. However, I fully respect it. If you hear what I'm saying, I think it's kind of challenging for us as a body to start, you know, second guessing courts and weighing in on, you know, the science was right, the process was right, et cetera, when I don't believe that most of us really are in a position to do so.
Thank you, Senator Dembro, Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro. One of the things that does seem quite obvious, though, is the rate at which these wolves are increasing. Historical fact from three other states that have gone through the very same thing. quite obvious that these numbers will continue to increase, if not at the same rate, at a better rate. We do put our a lot of faith in Fish and Wildlife and the biologists and the scientists that do work in these programs. And when the programs turn out to be exceedingly successful from one perspective, it is difficult to say, do you want to delay this process for several years and affect the economic activity in the ranching community, in the small community of Willow. So it is an issue up in the counties that these wolves are all concentrated in, although we do have them down in Medford now, and we have them in Klamath. So they're spreading across the state. They've not crossed I-5 yet. But, you know, when that time comes, I think decisions that are made up in northeastern Oregon will be much easier. So.
And one concluding comment, Mr. Chair, I agree. It's not our intent to second guess what ODFNW did. It's to confirm what they did.
Thank you both for being here and taking some very tough and pointed questions. Obviously, everybody that's in this room now understands that this is a contentious issue and an emotional issue, and I really do appreciate strong feelings. Don't have to back down, but there's always respect for one another in this process. So I appreciate not only your guys' tenor in bringing this forward, but also the tenor of the committee members. And because I don't think we need to dance around this. This is a contentious political issue. I think that we all understand why this bill is here, and we need to get the department up here next to give us some context.
Senator Edwards, thank you for that, and also thank you for hearing this bill.
Mm-hmm. And thank you all very much.
Thank you.
So with that, if the department could come forward and give us some context for what we're talking about here, wolf management plan, numbers of breeding pairs, total numbers, phase 1, 2, and 3, triggers for those, and I think that's obviously, and then information that you presented to the commission and their decision. Go ahead.
Very good. Good afternoon, Senator Edwards, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Shannon Hearn. I'm the Deputy Director for Fish and Wildlife Programs. We will try and touch on basically everything you just requested, from background to the delisting decision. We didn't bring anything explicitly on the model and those kind of things, so we could follow up. On our commission website, we do have that full analysis on there. If you want it, we could pull it off and get it to you fairly quickly. I'm going to let Kevin introduce himself, and then we will present similar what we did in the House, and then we'll see if you guys have follow-up questions.
Thanks, Shannon. Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, committee members. For the record, name is Kevin Blakely. I'm the Deputy Administrator in the Wildlife Division with Oregon Fish and Wildlife. What I thought I'd do is run through some of the background materials we also presented over on the House side. Ron Anglin, the division administrator, presented that information, and then I kind of followed up with some kind of next steps after that. So what I could do is run through this, and then I could maybe most specifically address Senator Whitsitt's question on pairs and packs at that point. Okay.
Would you guys prefer that we ask questions as you go, or do you think you're probably going to end up hitting on everything? Or what's going to be the most efficient?
There are only 12 slides, so if you are comfortable in doing that, I think we could ask them along the way. That's perfectly fine. Chair, thanks.
Ask along? You want them as we're going through?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as we go.
Okay, so I'm going to give a brief background on the history of wolves in Oregon, because it's a fairly brief one in regards to the first documented wolf in Oregon since extirpation was in 1999. That wolf was one that was a collared wolf that was referenced earlier in Grant County. Wolf was captured. We had the ability to take that back, Fish and Wildlife Service, back to the experimental population in Idaho. They also let us know that's never happening again. So we basically knew at that point we had to learn about wolves, face what wolves meant to Oregon. In 2003, the department took on the most extensive public process that we've ever had on the wildlife side in regards to bringing in experts from Canada and across the U.S. for wolf management, wolf conflict, all the things that are associated with managing wolves in a, on a state for both constituents and for other natural resources. We continued those plans and workshops. 2005, that culminated in the first wolf conservation and management plan for Oregon. 2008, we had our first documented pack in Oregon, up in Northeast Oregon. And, you know, from there, we had lots of growth, lots of following on those packs and pairs, collaring wolves. We had our first wolf plan review on a five-year time frame in 2010. And then, of course, last year in November, the delisting process. In general, the Wolf Conservation Management Plan is a three-phased approach. And these phases are similar to other state plans that have now been in place, most recently Washington and California. The first phase is, we call it the conservation phase. Basically, it is intensive monitoring. It addresses all kinds of things, biology and conflict associated with wolves. In the conservation phase, what we were looking at is four breeding pairs for three consecutive years, basically to move through the move out of the conservation phase, meaning you have enough distribution and recovery of wolves to go to phase two. I'll talk about different zones in wolf management zones in Oregon as well. The four breeding pairs for three consecutive years, that's not a statewide number, that's for each of our zones. In phase two, it's a transition phase. Basically, the wolf plan very explicitly, though, does direct the commission to consider delisting. It basically makes it that plain and simple, but it involves a biological status review that I'll get into in a little bit. In phase two, it also moves the bar from conservation to get to the management phase, and phase three is seven breeding pairs for three consecutive years.
Can I stop you really quickly? Yep. So you move from phase one to phase two once you get up to five breeding pairs, and then you're in phase two from five to seven?
To move out of phase one is four breeding pairs for three consecutive years.
Four. Okay.
Yep. And that does not mean that any one pair of wolves has to consistently raise pups for 3 years. That just means in that wolf zone or in that management zone that you have enough pairs to satisfy those criteria. So it doesn't mean that that same pair has to successfully raise pups every for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Senator, what's it?
Thank you. Mr. Blakely, the division of Oregon regarding wolves is rather interesting. Only for that purpose are Klamath and Lake counties almost entirely in western Oregon. And so when you start talking about how many packs of wolves there has to be before you move to the next step, I would expect that virtually all of those wolves will be on the Modoc Plateau and Lake and Klamath County and slopping over a little bit into Jackson County. They're not going to be up the Willamette Valley. So when we start talking about the progression to get to the delisting number for Western Oregon, they're all in my backyard. They're all in Lake and Klamath County. Right?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, I'll show a map on some of the wolf management zones, but you're exactly right in regards to that. But delisting doesn't require both zones to be in that. Delisting basically was, as it was outlined in a plan, is that when you move into phase two for Oregon in any one of those zones, that would constitute the conversation for delisting.
In this entire state, Paul? In the entire state or just in
it could be satisfied, excuse me, Chair Edwards, Senator Woods, it could be satisfied in either Wolf Management Zone. The next slide I'll have will have an outline of where those zones are. And, and you are right, geographically, it lobes for the West Management Zone. It does lobe down to Klamath and Lake Counties from some initial habitat evaluation mapping we did.
Senator Prasansky.
Thank you. Before we go off this slide, since we're here, my understanding in looking at how this is set up, and it seems like it's rings true from how you've got it presented on that slide. My understanding is that the plan itself calls for potential delisting once there are four pairs for three consecutive years in each of these regions. Is that correct?
Chair Edwards, Senator Prasansky, in either one of the Wolf Management Zones.
Does the plan actually say for moving to delisting as compared to looking at a status review to just see where things are at and see what the next step should be or could be?
Chair Edwards, Senator Prasansky, the plan isn't that specific in regards to biological status review every year. Every year we do have an annual report process that we present to the commission that outlines status of the populations, what we know what our accurate breeding pair and pack count is. So that would be our minimum population estimate. So we give that every year to basically kind of give that information and work along in regards to where we are on status of wolves. At that same time, we would have conversations about where we are on issues such as conflict, issues such as how many, what would be the next steps in regards to delisting, whatever that would be kind of the conversation of the annual report.
Mr. Chair, if I can follow up. You may cover this in your rest of your presentation. I'll just put it out there unless this is the appropriate time to answer. I'm looking at that slide, phase two on the transition. It says consideration for delisting. Was there other statuses looked at besides just going to delisting in the sense of understanding there's a threatened status, which would be less than delisting? And I'd like to know in your presentation, if it's not appropriate now, whenever it is, as to why we've jumped to delisting versus maybe taking it down a notch from being protected, but not going as far as it appears that we chose to go.
Yeah, Senator Edwards, Chair Edwards, Senator Prasansky, the conversation, the question was asked by the commission. I don't remember the exact words that, or discussion where it went, but we talked about what it meant to go from threatened to endangered, what that status meant, and what it meant to delist. And the differences were extremely slight according to our Department of Justice opinion. What we do know is that on either listing or delisting, what drives wolf management, wolf recovery is the Wolf Conservation Management Plan. It would not have changed any actions that have moved forward since November with the delisting, or if it had been downlisted, it would not have changed any different management actions.
Thank you.
Good. Go ahead.
Okay, and then after phase two, moving into phase three, we call that the management phase. What that does is it's a balanced management actions, above the phase two objective. So you're still looking at monitoring the population. From that point, you don't have a criteria for, a number of breeding pair per for consecutive years. But in the case that we're in currently, you would still be in phase one, for instance, in West Wolf Management Zone, where it hasn't met that criteria. So the wolf plan outlines management actions for each of those zones according to the phase that's appropriate there. One of the important parts about the management phase is it does have opportunities and options for potential pack management. That pack management addresses conflict at different levels. So that's a key part that has been in place in the discussion about how a wolf plan is interactive in the future and is a key component of other states that have looked to the future of wolves or currently managing wolves. So I can briefly talk about the wolf management zones in Oregon. As part of the wolf plan, the light blue is a West Wolf Management Zone, and then everything to the east of that, the darker blue, and then the hash green is our east wolf management zone. The reason it has two colors in there, that shows the federal delisting line. Wolves are federally delisted, and as stated earlier, east of 395, they are delisted. So, you know, west of that line or in the blue, all the blue areas there are federally listed still.
So, Mr. Blakely,
the way that...
Senator Whitsitt, then Senator Prezonsky.
So, Mr. Blakely, then that means that, if I understand it, everything that's not in green is currently still listed as an endangered species under the federal act.
Chairward, Senator Whitsitt, that's correct.
Thank you.
Pass.
Okay. Show a brief snapshot of minimum population growth throughout just really a handful of years here. One key thing to remember as we talk about these numbers, this is the minimum wolf population. So as I stated earlier in our annual report from our breeding pair, and these are all eyes on wolves or physical evidence that those wolves are on the ground, adults and pups from the previous spring. So these counts are minimum. We don't have an expansion or correction factor that we feel comfortable with in giving. So these are from year to year the same methodology. So it shows just a consistent growth pattern in our wolf population that other states have actually seen as well. Talked about this year's population. We're completing that now. So generally that's a January, February final count. So those include, those are adults and pups from the previous breeding. And when the earlier testimony talked about the pups from this year aren't counted, the pups haven't been born yet, so they'll be coming up. So the idea of a breeding pair in this concept is that those are pups that survive through the first winter, basically, so that a pair of wolves has successfully raised at least two pups into the next year. So that's will be the definition as we talk about breeding pairs and packs.
Well, can I have it?
Yeah.
Just to be clear then, Mr. Blakely, like OR7 came into Klamath several years ago, two or three years ago. Serendipitously, a female showed up. They now have pups. How many wolves are now in OR7's pack?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, I do not know off the top of my head the number of wolves in that exact pack. But if a pack can include a breeding pair, so what you're saying is true, OR7 found a mate, had pups. If they raise those pups through the entire winter then from that spring when they were born, then that would be a breeding pair rather than a pack. But it's kind of synonymous with that, but I couldn't tell you exact number of wolves in that pack.
What is the designation when other wolves join that breeding pair?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, it would just be a larger pack.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What is the... I was reading the wolf management plan itself, and it said the management objective, and I wonder if you could shed a little bit more light on this, at least what is agreed to in this very contentiously negotiated document. It says the management objective is seven, is that right, or eight? I can't remember if it's seven or I opened up the synopsis to try to find what that was again. That's not necessarily, that doesn't constitute, you know, as many wolves as the landscape could support, but I got the impression from reading that document, the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, that seven, that's the number that's sticking in my mind. I'm scrolling through the executive summary right now trying to find it.
Seven.
And seven?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it is seven. Okay. I asked you for, so could you expand on that just a little bit? I thought that was interesting because we're talking about, you know, three, and then we're talking about four, and we're talking about five to seven, and what the different triggers for these different phases, and it's not as though those numbers are so far away from like a number of like 50 or 100. It's 7. So could you expand on that a little bit more? Like, why? What's that number mean?
So, Chair Edwards, so you're right. In the wolf management plan, the management population objective calls for 7 pairs. And that was basically kind of looking back at the federal requirements as they were looking at delisting and managing wolves. And so each state was given essentially their breeding pair objectives. Idaho was 10 pairs. And so they were based on more extensive wilderness and those kind of things. So that's what it was negotiated at and modeled after.
Yeah, Chair Edwards, to add on that just real quickly, breeding pairs is a really good way to measure, biological recovery. So you're looking for increase of breeding pairs rather than having a target population objective of 20 wolves, 50 wolves, whatever it may be. It just shows consistent production, so with some consistent biological measures for the wolf population.
If I could just follow up, but still, that doesn't seem like a very high number, right? 7? I mean, if something were to happen to a breeding pair, that's 20% of the population gone.
So, Chair Edwards, Senator Denbrough, we will, when we get to the criteria, talk a little bit more about that reproductive failure in the criteria a little bit. But that was deemed 7 pairs would be to be able to maintain that population without going into reproductive failure.
Okay, Chair Edwards, wanted to talk just a little bit, just show you some visuals of current pack distribution throughout the state. Left that blue line on there to show you east and west wolf management zones about down through the middle of the state there. So you can see that they're, as some predicted and some hoped for, maybe there has been wolf packs established in the west wolf management zone. That trend continues. So there were lots of packs, of course, scattered in northeast Oregon, even with some overlays. There are some irregular shapes there. That shows that we have a collar on that pack, a GPS radio collar that allows us to be very specific about home ranges and movements. Other ones that are more recent, wolf pairs or individual wolves. The wolf plan outlines that we identify areas of known wolf activity or AQUAs, and generally that's just where you see a round circle rather than a polygon. So that just shows we believe that wolf is in a wolf or wolves are in that area, but we don't have enough information. They haven't been there long enough to show us dispersal and use and a good home range estimate. And in most of those cases, we may or may not have a collar on those, and that would be one of our priorities in phase one and phase two, is to have collars on at least one wolf in each pack. So as part of the delisting discussion, again, we met that management conservation management objective in January 2015. So that means we had 4 breeding pairs for the previous 3 years. And then what that did was with that information, had the discussion with the commission, and they directed us to move forward with the delisting consideration. We had put together a very extensive biological status review. That biological status review gives a lot of the background information on population distribution, all the attributes that we'd need to address then the State Endangered Species Act criteria for delisting. And those criteria for delisting, and I've paraphrased them quite a bit here, there are 5 of those. First being not in danger of extinction in any significant portion of the range throughout Oregon. There is natural reproductive potential that is not in danger of failure. The populations are not undergoing deterioration of range or their primary habitat of use. And that there's not odor utilization of species in its habitat now or in the future. And that there's regulatory certainty into the future. Each of those criteria were reviewed through that biological status review. We then had a very extensive presentation. We had three different commission meetings where we presented different information to the commission before the final meeting in November, where they would make a decision either way. One key component of the delisting discussion was what we call the ball of yarn slide. So when we showed the earlier slide about wolf packs, and you could see, you know, a number of packs in Northeast Oregon and a few in a couple other places in the Southern Cascades. One of the key things is that really didn't tell the whole story about wolf dispersal and wolf use. And there's, you know, certainly you can show here, wolves in Oregon were not reintroduced. They came from members of the other members of the Northern Rocky Mountain population from Idaho. The distribution was and recovery and use of Oregon landscape was fairly well predicted from that corner of Oregon, but we would expect that wolves, as in other states, would fully range throughout other habitats. So this ball of yarn slide shows that there is certainly movement by individual wolves throughout Oregon landscape. They have found and traveled many places in the Cascades. There's good connectivity back over into Idaho to the source population. You see travels into California, of course, with OR7. Currently have another wolf that's traveled down into California and is now back as an individual wolf in the Klamath area, Klamath Lake counties. So this ball of yarn was very instrumental in trying to help explain use of the Oregon landscape by wolves, being that they have traveled and have shown good use of the landscape and led us in our biological status review to address some of the issues of that they are using a good portion of the Oregon landscape, not just Northeast Oregon and a couple areas in the Southern Cascades. So as part of the delisting process, I had a commission meeting in October 2015. We updated the biological status review. We had developed and utilized a science peer-reviewed model for looking at minimum population and danger of extinction. Also looked at all the rest of the criteria in that initial meeting. And then at that meeting, the commission was interested in the department bringing back an opportunity to evaluate three options for delisting. That included delisting the wolves for the entire state, a portion of the state, or not taking any action at all for delisting. And that was part of what formulated the final commission meeting in November. At that meeting, evaluated again the final biological status review against each of the five delisting criteria. Extensive public input, and public input was also taken at each one of the previous commission meetings that we outlined biological status review and updates of the process. The commission, the proposal before the commission and the vote by the commission showed that all the delisting criteria had been met. And again, as Shannon referred to, there's a really good agenda item summary and portion of the commission meeting talks in depth about each of the criterias and what either modeling or review or how the decision process was outlaid for each of those criteria to assure that it was met. At that meeting in November, the commission then took action to delist statewide.
Can I ask a question, yeah. Ms. Chair, just about that? Somebody complained to me that the decision to, or promulgating the decision to delist happened before the end of the public comment period. Is there merit in that? In terms of the calendar or?
Chair Edwards, Senator Denbrough, I think I understand that question right, in that when we have our commission meetings prepared, we take public input, I think up to 24 hours before the commission meets, receives more public testimony, and then it eventually makes that decision or delays that decision. So I guess what you're hearing is that there was a cutoff line prior to 24 hours that we implemented that we weren't taking public correspondence on, and I know that's not true. But there was a significant, I mean, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of written correspondence that we compiled and provided the commission, and we had to provide it in phases because we were receiving so many. So,
were those mainly in support of a decision to delist or opposition?
Chair Edwards, Senator D'Ambro, I've heard folks state that there's a percentage out there that they've ran. I don't think the department has done that to see what percentage we've received. We heard from all sides.
So it was pretty balanced then, or split?
The public testimony was pretty balanced and split. The written testimony, I think most people, when they're referring to our petitions and things, and those numbers do weigh out heavier on the opponent side.
Thank you, Mr. Blakely. Do you believe that the delisting decision should be a political decision or a scientific decision?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsett, the way the department, the Wolf Plan itself is part of our base management for wolf conservation recovery. The ESA statute is a completely separate place that has those criteria listed. So what we did as a department was outline through the biological status review everything we know about wolves that was applicable to those criteria and try to give all the best and most current information for the commission then to make that evaluation.
So the evaluation should be made on a scientific basis as opposed to a vote? By a vote of the people, so to speak. I mean, the point I'm trying to make, perhaps inarticulately, is the decision to delist should be made on a scientific basis on whether the wolf is being recovered or not, as opposed to public opinion as to whether they like wolves or not.
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsett, the ESA statute outlines the commission, charges the commission with reviewing those criteria and making that decision. The criteria are all scientific.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. So just following up on that, since it shouldn't be a political decision, is there any reason why we need this bill for ODFW to do what it's already done?
Chair Edwards, Senator Prozanski, I've been asked that question a lot since this bill was introduced.
Well, I mean, let's just put it this way. Have you ever had this situation where something has been delisted and then you had a bill that comes out freshly after that to politicize the actions of ODFW?
No, we have not had that exact situation.
And does us doing whatever we do here have any distinction based on what the good senator said as to making a scientific recommendation to the commission for their action as compared to getting in this political genre?
Chair Edwards, Senator Prozanski, for me, it's really establishing a clear direction and buy-in to the Wolf Plan. That's essentially what I see when I see them ratifying the decision.
And so if I follow up on that, so then I assume, were you part of the discussions that actually brought this plan with the three phases forward as to what we were going to do as a state agency?
Chair Edwards, Senator Prozanski, I wasn't part of that development of the plan.
You weren't there.
No. Nope.
So do you think that was should have been something that should have been actually negotiated in putting together this three-step, three-phase plan, that if we actually do delisting, then we're going to ask the legislature to pat us on the back or confirm what we did so we can have clear directions?
Chair Edwards, Senator Prozanski, I'm not going to give you the exact answer to that.
I
obviously
assume not.
I wasn't there. But I do feel, having not been there, that the plan does provide us that direction. I, being new, get to go back and look at what was agreed upon. And so I've heard many discussions that we need a level playing field if we're going to open this plan up for review and we make those agreements, then we stick to them.
I'm sorry, you've lost me on that answer because it seems like it went in a different direction than what I thought I had posed to you. So can you walk me through again and give me a clarification of what you were just articulating?
Chair Edwards, Senator Prozanski, sorry. What I'm trying to articulate is the wolf management plan is the plan that we want to drive the management of wolves in Oregon. We don't want that through litigation. We don't really want that through legislation either. But ultimately, we have all agreed to come to the table and every 5 years or so review that plan. And those are the terms that we set, and that's what I think we should agree to. So that's all I'm trying to clarify.
I'll come back. We'll continue. Thank you.
You have more slides. I forgot where we were. I have questions.
You always got phase three.
Yeah, no, the last slide was basically just on what our next steps in the plans are. So we're undergoing wolf plan review. It's on our five-year cycle. When we first teed this up to the commission, they had asked us to first take a look at the annual report. If we met those criteria for delisting, they wanted us to bring that back to them as a biological status review. So we delayed the wolf plan review, and we're undertaking that now. That would conclude the presentation.
My question was, what could you touch on? Could you touch on a little bit more about the differences between the phases in how you manage wolves? I mean, ultimately, I think there are a whole lot of strategic factors at play here. Everybody's trying to decide that this is just science or it's just politics. It's all of the above. I mean, this whole issue has been about science and politics and the interface of science and politics since wolves started making their way back into Oregon, which I'm not apologetic about saying I think is a good thing. But how we proceed with carrying out the wolf management plan is very political, obviously. There are people that don't want wolves at all in the state of Oregon, and there are people that I think want, you know, complete, you know, back to the entire historical range at whatever the natural landscape could support, as if humans didn't also occupy that landscape. So somewhere between those extremes, we've ended up with a wolf management plan. And that is inherently a very, very political, issue. So underlying some of that is when different types of management techniques can be used and when they can't. And that's, you know, strategy about how changes to the plan come about, and that putting all that aside, or at least the moment, what are the differences between phases 1, 2, and 3 about what the department can use for tools for management?
Sure, I'll try to outline those briefly, very, very quickly, Chair Edwards. In phase 1, it's the conservation phase. So what you're looking to do in that phase, it has the strictest kind of outline for how you address conflicts. So in regards to conflict primarily on the livestock production side, health and human safety, some of those different issues are in the conversation as well. But it basically, the conservation phase has a very rigorous number of complaints, validation of those complaints from confirmed depredations. So that process is a very, very discreet and is outlined very strictly in phase 1. The conservation number there for the number of breeding pairs for consecutive years is a conservative number, but that again is a number that outlines many more wolves than what you talk about for breeding pairs in those consecutive years. And then when moving to phase 2, basically you have a little bit different criteria for addressing wolf conflict. So knowing there are more wolves on the landscape, you've demonstrated that through meeting the conservation objective of those breeding pairs for 3 consecutive years. It then allows a little bit some different, not necessarily different tools, but different triggers for those tools to take place in that transition phase. When you get to phase 3, there's a couple different things that happen on the And again, you've actually reached a higher population level because you've met the 7 breeding pairs for 3 consecutive years. So in each of those phases, you're reaching inherently a higher population level for wolves in that management zone. Phase 3 then allows for a little bit of a relaxing. We would not necessarily then, with that many number of packs and breeding pairs in the state, have the same overlay for numbers of collars that we had to have out there because you've met some of the other criteria for recovery. So you're trying to utilize your resources a little bit better, knowing that you've got wolves established in a large portion of a geographic area. It also allows for opportunity for other tools to come into place for management of the wolves or management of the packs. So whether they're in conflict with livestock producers, have agreed upon conflicts that the commission would agree for pack management, for management of big game populations, any number of things, it brings those tools into perspective in phase 3. And those tools are not there in phase 1 and phase 2. So there's inherent recovery of a population through the 3 phases, as well as a very different way you approach conflict and tee up different management actions through the different phases.
When can you kill wolves? That would be much more direct question.
Yeah, Chair
Edwards. Management of wolves. I feel like everybody's doing their best to not use the K word. So yeah. When can wolves be killed as a management tool, and under what circumstances?
Yes.
In phases 2 and 3.
Yeah, Chair Edwards. Wolves could be killed according to different triggers in any of the phases.
Right. Okay.
So it just is tease it up differently for what they have for recurrent depredations within a specific time span. That time span lengthens. In phase 2, number of depredations, confirmed depredations changes. So the rules for when you would lethally remove a wolf changes. There is not opportunity for pack management for hunting purposes at all in phase 1 and phase 2. Any consideration of hunting does not occur until phase 3, and that whole process, of course, goes through commission recommendations and public review. It is not an automatic trigger in phase 3 where there are automatically wolf seasons. It depends on management going through what status and what some of the different needs and balances are there.
And phases 1, 2, and 3 per the map are applied. Like, so a delisting decision does not mean you move to phase 3 in Western Oregon. Like, I'm trying to just make
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Currently, we are in phase 2 in the East Wolf Management Zone. In phase 1, all the actions for phase 1 are overlaid in our West Wolf Management Zone.
I think you actually have several questions. The first one, you heard my comments earlier about a wolf being in my backyard. Okay. So this wolf is attacking my wife's dog. Am I allowed to kill the wolf?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, in the act of killing, harming, there is a kill permit process that would allow a landowner
to do
that.
Have to get a permit,
that.
Or can you do it?
Can you do it?
I need to go back and look because that's still in the federal. You're in the federal side, in a portion there. So if
the
you're east of that
in,
area,
we're still in. We're still under state and federal. Yeah. We're in the blue zone.
Correct.
So. Do I have to get
we
have
consult
to get
with
a
our federal
before
partners
I kill the,
under
before
the
I kill the wolf, or do I have to wait for it to kill my dog?
Mm-hmm. The Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, the answer to the question really, I'd be interacting with our federal partners at that point. The protection, we manage it under the Wolf Conservation Plan, but it has jurisduction under the U.S.
Fish
and Wildlife.
Okay, it's too late for my dog. Can I shoot it if it's taken on my wife? Because she'd go after the wolf with a club. So, you know, can I protect my wife?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, yes, there's statute that does allow for that.
Thank you. As a veterinarian, I mean, I've spent a lot of time putting animals back together that have had predators attack them unsuccessfully. And big cats almost always jump on the back, and it's a quick kill. They break their neck. Those that miss leave ghastly slices, about three or four slices down both sides of the animal, and you can spend half a day sewing them up. A wolf will kill a dog in the same way that a dog will kill a dog, by biting the throat and choking them. But when it comes to the prey animals, like deer and elk and moose and cattle and horses and sheep, could you explain in some detail how wolves kill those animals?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsett, I can explain a little bit in regards to some of the more common prey items. A lot of the a lot of this comes from doing livestock investigations, where the district biologists, wildlife services agents, we're charged with doing a livestock depredation investigation, and you're looking for very specific things. So how they kill is really then, you can do a necropsy on an animal that had died from a wolf attack, either died or injured, and what you see on the inside and the outside are extremely different. So you will not see just one wound on a throat, kind of, that you had talked about. You would see multiple bites, especially along back end and hams and underside of front and back legs, real common areas that they attack, and they're biting and biting and biting, causing internal hemorrhaging to a massive degree, basically, and that's what kills the animal. It's not a lot of cases, not even a lot of tooth punctures.
And follow up, once this animal has been hamstrung and so it's down, does the wolves normally kill the animal before they start eating them?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsett, I could not answer that.
I can
directly.
Do. I can. They do. They normally start eating them alive. That's the modus operandi. So, and do wolves ever kill for sport?
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsett, sport's kind of more of an anthropomorphic thing. I know that when we do livestock depredations,
do wolves ever kill for reasons other than to eat their prey?
When we have done livestock depredation, Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsett, livestock depredations, we have seen individual wolf or two wolves kill more than two animals. And when they take some animals back to a den, there are certainly still some animals there, whether they intended to come back and forage more later, do not know.
Are you thinking, Senator, like territorialness or
No, I'm
like
thinking
that,
2 days ago in southern Idaho, two wolves killed 10 sheep from bite wounds, and another 176 of them died from terror from piling up on one another. Or a few years before that, there was a situation in Montana near where Representative Whitsett grew up, where the wolves got into a pen of ram lambs, about 200-pound lambs, who were just ready to be sold for breeding, and killed 122 of them.
Any other questions for the department?
I do.
Yeah. Senator Dembrow, then Przanski.
Thanks, Chair. So one of the concerns that we heard from the presenters of the bill, from Representative Barreto, was that the lawsuit that's out there will slow the process down, right? And, presumably the lawsuit is there to, because there's a challenge to the process or the science or, I'm not actually sure what the details are. But there's a concern that to allow that to play out would do harm, because it would slow the process of our moving into delisting. It would slow down that process. And let's assume that it did slow it down by a couple of years. What would be the negative effects of that?
So, Chair Edwards, Senator Dembrow, I think what they were referring to were those management actions in phase three.
Right.
Since we are delisted, once we reach that phase, we can implement them, and some of them can be implemented if we're not delisted. So essentially, it's the measures needed to take when there is livestock depredation to actually go out and have ODFMW Wildlife Services deal with the wolves. And that's their concern, is there will be an injunction or a delay in us being able to state that the wolf is delisted and therefore we're in
Yeah. Would you say that we're in a critical phase where, you know, time is of the essence for the management practices to go forth?
Chair Edwards, Senator Denbrough, I've heard that we'll be in phase three as early as 2017, possibly. So we are. It is imminent that we would be there into phase three and moving towards those actions.
Right, but I mean, how? What if we're not? You know, what if we don't get to them until 2018? What kind of harm do you envision coming from that?
Chair Edwards, Senator Denbrough, currently in phase three with those management actions that are outlined there. We're underway with the Wolf Plan review. We'd expect that that's going to be part of the conversation is what happens in phase three, what are the different things that tee up, just get really into the detail. We have not been in a phase three. Certainly it was envisioned through the Wolf Plan of what that meant when we got there in that part of wolf conservation. But without having those management actions be, you know, fairly defined or have an ability to know you could implement those, it certainly it would delay putting those in, and it kind of makes the conversation now a little bit less meaningful because you don't know what the future holds for that decision, for the delisting decision.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess hearing all this about the Wolf Management Plan, I guess the question I need to ask is, does the Wolf Management Plan call for the agency, ODFW, to come to the legislature and ask us to codify your decision to delist the wolf at this stage?
Chair Edwards, Senator Przanski, it does not.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both. Next, we're going to have an opponent panel. And when I say panel, people haven't signed up necessarily together. I just mean I'm going to call three people up. So. So I'm going to go down the list. Stephen Cafori, Amaroke Weiss, and Quinn Reed. And then on deck, we'll have Rocky Dollum, John O'Keefe, and Nathan Jackson. I think that's right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society. We are the professional and scientific society of wildlife biologists. Our role as the legislature is to present and advocate for science-based decision-making. Excuse me. Our members have closely been following the development and implementation of the Oregon Wolf Plan. The plan was created by a political process whereby competing interests came up with a complex solution to a complex issue and was passed by the legislature. As a scientific society, we do not engage in issues that are resolved by the political process. We do offer our best scientific analysis of decisions and policies, but not their wisdom. It is our opinion that once the plan was completed and administered by ODFW, it has been effectively managed and that agency has made science-based decisions. House Bill 4040 presents two distinct issues, one substantive and one procedural. We agree with the substance of the bill. We think the agency decision to delist the wolf was a proper one. However, we have strong objections to the process issue of enacting a statute that either lists or delists a species. In our view, the process of listing or delisting is a scientific one and should be based solely on the best scientific evidence. The only issue should be, is the species in danger of extinction or not? This is not a political issue and should not be the topic of a statute. It's not a matter for compromise. It's like the legislature passing a bill that says the boiling point of water is 212 degrees. However, as we oppose 4040, we want to say that it merely endorses a decision that was previously made by an administrative agency and is using scientific methods, but the bill is not harmless. The bill establishes a potential precedent whereby legislative action can place or remove a species from the ESA. And over the years I've been in front of this legislature, I've seen many attempts to do that, And I think it's a misunderstanding of the difference between the legislative process and the administrative agency process. The legislative process is one where competing interests come together and resolve differences through a compromise process. The administrative agency, when they decide to list or delist a species, does not look at compromise. It does not listen to public opinion. It does not look at interest groups. It makes a very specific decision whether that species is in danger or is not in danger. Now, once that decision is made, then the management falls back onto the plan, which was developed by the political process, and we think that's appropriate. So, in summary, we oppose this bill. We see it has no good outcome, and it only sets a dangerous precedent.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Amaruk Weiss. I'm the West Coast Wolf Organizer for the Center for Biological Diversity. My comments are delivered on behalf of our nearly 18,000 Oregon members and supporters. We oppose House Bill 4040, but I'd like to give some history and some personal context for that opposition. 13 years ago, I was appointed by the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to be one of those very 14 stakeholders that assisted the department in developing the Wolf Plan. My role was to represent all wolf conservation organizations, no small task. It was an honor to participate. I took my role seriously. For 2 years, I attended every single one of those stakeholder meetings. I discussed options, negotiated with other stakeholders, gave input, and even had a hand in writing some of the text that's in the Wolf Plan. I regularly consulted with my peers in the wolf conservation community to make sure I was best representing their perspective. But I also took seriously my role of consulting with the other stakeholders at the table to see where we could find places of agreement. When the 2 years were up, all of the 14 stakeholders except for two were able to reach agreed upon terms. The stakeholder who represented Eastern Oregon County Commissions said that he would support the Wolf Plan, but when the commission adopted it, he ultimately declined to lend his support. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association representative came into the meetings with a position of zero tolerance for wolves. Not one wolf in Oregon was her position, and through the 2 years, declined to negotiate at all. We were very grateful that there was a representative representing rural Oregon interests who was one of the largest sheep growers in the state who was able to give some of that input. After the plan was adopted, several years later, after leadership changed in the Cattlemen's Association, they came to support the plan. That means that they accepted all of the terms of the plan. So the rest of us had found many points of agreement, and three of them are most relevant for this particular bill. First, we agreed that when the wolf population in eastern Oregon reached the benchmark of four breeding pairs for three successive years, ODFW would conduct a biological status review, and the commission could consider whether state delisting was warranted. Nowhere in the plan state that at that benchmark will delisting happen or must delisting happen. We also agreed, and we put this in the plan, that that decision by the commission had to be based on documented and verifiable science, and it had to be based on an analysis of the five delisting criteria set forth in the State Endangered Species Act. Second, we did agree that there was a very specific and vital role for the legislature in the Wolf Plan. We specifically asked the legislature to pass two bills. One was to establish and fund a compensation fund to compensate ranchers for livestock losses to wolves and to help pay for the costs of conflict prevention means. The other was to establish a subcategory under the game mammal statute to create a designation of special status game mammal and designate the wolf under that category. And it took a few years for those bills to be passed because the Cattlemen's Association opposed them, because it would mean that they were accepting wolves in Oregon, and they would be standing away from their stance of zero tolerance if they accepted the compensation fund. But thankfully, they decided to support the plan. The legislation was enacted, and we thank you for that. Third, everything else in the plan that had to do with science, we said that that should be left up to the commission and to ODFW. It says it in the plan. Now, you're aware that the commission's vote in November, the 4-2 vote to delist wolves statewide, has been legally challenged by three groups, including my own. We believe the commission did not make its decision based on verifiable science, and we believe that they did not accurately assess the delisting criteria. And it's not because we like wolves. It's because our perspective is based on the comments of 25 scientists who are highly credentialed in the fields of wolf biology, ecology, social conflict with carnivores, who submitted extensive, detailed comment letters to the commission. And all of those scientists found that the department's report and the delisting recommendation was fundamentally flawed and illogical. These are their comments. So in our legal challenge, we're simply asking for a court to conduct a judicial review and determine whether or not the commission acted lawfully or not. We haven't asked for an injunction. Wolves in Oregon are still delisted. They will remain delisted while the case is pending. We believe the place to settle that question of whether the commission acted legally or not is in front of a court. But this bill, HB 4040, in ratifying the commission's vote, that would substitute legislative action for judicial review, and it would usurp the authority of the commission by making the legislature the final arbiter. And I can tell you, I helped write the plan. Nowhere in the plan did we ask for, want, intend, or put into the plan that this should be something that would be legislated. As a stakeholder representative who helped craft the plan, I ask you to let that public process play out. The Wolf Plan review is about to start, the every 5-year review. That's not going to be slowed down by the lawsuit. In fact, the department issued their whole schedule of how that plan review will proceed over the next 8 to 10 months. And they issued that schedule after the lawsuit was filed. So the department isn't planning on slowing anything down. So I ask you to please let that public process play out, let the judicial process play out. And I believe, as a stakeholder who helped write that plan, that in doing so, you are actually honoring the people who wrote it, the people who agreed to it afterwards, and the plan itself. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks for your testimony. And I want to be clear, when I chuckled, it was because you said that you made some comment about trying to represent all the groups, and believe me, there are so many different groups, it's impossible to represent all the groups, and that's why I chuckled. So, go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Edwards and members of the committee, my name is Quinn Reed with Defenders of Wildlife. On behalf of our 18,000 members and supporters across Oregon, I urge you to oppose House Bill 4040. And as a point of clarification, though we share many of the same concerns that gave rise to the litigation, we are not ourselves parties to the lawsuit. Rather, our opposition lies in three primary grounds. First, this bill opens the door for the legislature to make politically driven decisions about the fate of imperiled animals across Oregon. Second, it ignores the commission's express request to the legislature. And third, and maybe most important, it turns its back on the collaborative spirit of the Wolf Plan. This bill sets a dangerous precedent for decisions that impact all of Oregon's imperiled species. Important decisions about whether to list or delist species should be based on science and not politics. Yet, the language of the bill asserts that the commission's delisting decision is, quote, ratified as satisfying the elements of ORS 496.176 and approved. Whether or not a listing or delisting decision meets the requirements of ORS 496.176 is a scientific assessment and one in which the legislature should not become entangled. The commission is the appropriate body with the necessary scientific expertise and established public processes to make these decisions. Second, when it delisted gray wolves, the commission expressed a desire for legislative action on 2 points, neither of which are addressed by House Bill 4040. On November 9th, 2016, immediately following the delisting decision, ODFW released a press release. It said, "Commissioners will be sending a note to the Oregon State Legislature asking that the law be changed so that listing and delisting would be allowed in only a portion of the state for other species in the future. Commissioners also asked that penalties for unlawfully taking a wolf be increased." House Bill 4040 honors neither of these requests from the commission. A legislative pat on the back is not necessary for delisting to go into effect. Indeed, it is already in effect. nor is a pat on the back anything that was requested by the commission. Finally, House Bill 4040 turns its back on the collaborative spirit of the Wolf Plan. As Amaruk discussed, the Wolf Plan was the result of a years-long collaborative process involving all stakeholders and is widely seen as a national model for wolf conservation and coexistence. This year, all of those stakeholders will return to the table for a planned five-year review and update of the plan. House Bill 4040 does not shore up the plan. It undermines it, and it undermines the collaborative spirit that made the plan possible in the first place. You need look only to history. Wolf delisting bills have been introduced in 2011, 2012, and 2015, all in direct contravention of the agreed-upon terms in the Wolf Plan. The legislature rightly opposed those measures, and it should oppose House Bill 4040. Thank you.
Thank you each. Senator Brzozinski.
Thank you. I don't know the answer to this. I think the advocates may, because of your legal team. I'm trying to figure out if this bill somehow may be considered what some might say a Trojan horse. And I'm going to kind of follow up what I heard. So we passed this bill. We're ratifying without taking into consideration all the scientific criteria, because we're saying even if it wasn't met, it's now delisted and it's been legislative done. Does that in any way impact the potential of on the lawsuit, that if you now have a legislative decision that actually codifies this, does it take it out of the premise that the challenge to the agency, right or wrong, not knowing if they have properly delisted or didn't properly delist, take that out of the question for the court, and the court would say it's a moot question because the legislature has now deemed that this has happened? I'm just trying to figure out if that might be another reason why we have the bill.
Chair Edwards, Senator Brzozinski, I am a former attorney. I'm on inactive status, and therefore the bar prohibits me from rendering a legal opinion. I can tell you that there will be other people who are going to follow with the same opposing position who will be able to legally answer your question. I will tell you that I can't imagine another reason as to why the bill would have been introduced. There is no reason to ratify what the commission has done. As you've heard from ODFW itself, it's not something that's typically done. As you heard from Senator Hansel himself, it's not something that's typically done. So my opinion as a person, as opposed to as an attorney, is that I believe that that is the reason it's being done, and as to whether or not it would have that full effect, I'm going to leave it to one of my fellow colleagues, perhaps Nick Cady, when he's up here testifying.
Oh, I can wait. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I, Mr. Chair, Senator Brzozinski, I'm in the same situation. I'm no longer a lawyer. But I believe that Senator Dembrough stated earlier in the hearing that he had asked that specific question of legislative counsel. And what I heard and what I understood Senator Dembrough to say was the answer to your question is yes. You might ask him to repeat what.
That's quite right. We'll we can cover that another time.
So what's it?
Yeah, I misunderstood Ms. Wise, but is it your testimony that you do not like wolves,
Senator? Sorry, now I'm chuckling. Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, no, it is not my testimony that I do not like wolves. It was my testimony that the reason we opposed the bill was not because we like wolves. It's because we believe that the science that was presented to the commission is accurate science and that it was ignored. I do like wolves, for the record.
Okay, thank you each. So Rocky Dollum, John O'Keefe, and Nathan Jackson. And then up next we'll have and then before you guys start, on deck we'll have Shannon Queen Hearn, who in? I can't read the writing. Kevin.
That's from the agency.
Oh, I'm sorry. They already went. Scott Beckstead, Nick Cady, and Lena Spada-Sear. Go ahead.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, Rocky Dahlem on behalf of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. John O'Keefe and Nathan Jackson here, and I think I will hopefully try to answer some of the questions or maybe frame the issue that I think is has sort of been placed on the table here in the last few minutes since we started the hearing, and let them talk a little bit more about the substance of the position of the cattlemen and what this means to livestock producers throughout the state. I'd also draw your attention to OLIS. We have several producers who come from what ODF&W calls that ball of yarn in Wallowa County and northeastern Oregon, and I think that they do a good job of at least framing the personal aspect of this. And we appreciate you taking up this issue and the discussion. And what we would like to at least point out, and I think everybody understands this, this has obviously been a contentious process for well over a decade and pushing into two decades. But the success of the wolves and the growth that you've seen from ODF&W is not because of the opposition of the livestock producers throughout the state, but I would say it's fair to say that their compliance with the plan and the sacrifices that they've made have been a huge step in why the wolves have been able to come back. And while the plan has not had universal consensus since the beginning, it certainly has some buy-in. In order to somewhat be brief and get directly to the issue, I think that we should talk, or I plan on talking about two of these big issues that have come up today, and that's what is either the intent or maybe more importantly the effect of this bill, and at least what the cattlemen's opinion on the legal analysis of this bill and what that means for the legislature for a, from a policy standpoint, and then the second is to address the precedent issue. First of all, we'd clarify what the discussion was in the House and questions that were asked were, does this bill preclude judicial review? And our answer was, and I think you've already seen it with Senator Dembro's reference to legislative counsel and the earlier panelists, to say that you can get many different answers from many different lawyers. We don't believe that this bill in and of itself precludes anybody from continuing with the case that's already been filed, but I think it's fair to say that we do believe that the legislature weighing in and considering ODF&W's finding will go a long way in deciding or perhaps resolving that litigation or that appeal. And I think that's important to say. And I appreciate at the beginning of the discussion that this is a complex issue and it's a passionate issue. And I think Mr. Cafori captured it when he said that there's a procedural issue here. And that really is the question for the legislature, a policy choice about whether the legislature weighs in or whether or not the court weighs in. And they do that at the behest of a very limited set of special interest groups. And not to be overly aggressive from the testimony we heard earlier, but the Center for Biological Diversity testified about the stakeholder process and the buy-in from that process and to protect that full public process. I think we can all acknowledge that when we go into a court process, it brings in a limited number of parties who are then subject to potential settlement discussions, and we've seen that history here with the Wolf Plan. In 2010, there was depredation issues with the Omnaha Pack, and that ultimately led to some changes to Phase 2, which ratcheted back from the original stakeholder plan, and ultimately, with general consensus by the legislature, the changes that were finally agreed to in 2013 were passed with fairly overwhelming consensus. So I think, again, it's important to say that we do see that this will have an effect on the litigation, and Senator Dembro, respectfully, that is part of the question here. To address some of the questions that you asked earlier, I think we should ask that question about science and whether or not it's the legislature, the province of you as a legislative body, and the public process that we're experiencing here today and have for the last few months to make this important decision on procedural grounds, or whether it's the province of a court and a few of those groups, and not all those groups that have testified today are parties to that lawsuit. But it's important to talk about collaboration and stakeholder buy-in and the public process and consider what that means for the alternative to this bill. And I think it's important that while we believe that the questions we've been asked in prior hearings answered the questions that were asked, we do think that it's important to say that's what we believe the issue is here. And why that's important is because it does hold in balance the credibility and the trust of the Wolf Plan. Now, this bill is about ratifying that decision, and I want to just clarify, at least from our legal perspective, some of the things that have been said. This bill does not delist the gray wolf. This bill ratifies the decision. This bill also does not preclude ODF&W from relisting should they find that requirements should be met. That's our opinion of how this works. It's ratifying those findings. So I think it's important for us to acknowledge that that is what the question we're asking the legislature to answer. And in our view, By asking that question, the legislature can either choose not to act on this bill and move this bill, and that is a choice by the legislative body to hand this decision over to the court and let the court and those parties decide. And I guess specifically to the Dash A2 amendments, and I think we understand the purpose, Senator Dembro, but that would be a proactive decision if you were to adopt that amendment and move the bill. That would be a proactive decision by the legislature to say that specifically the legislature does not want to weigh in. Now, I want to go to precedent before handing it over to my colleagues and members here, but a few things about precedent, because I think Senator Hansel has a list, and we're happy to share some of those examples in a more general sense when the legislature weighs in on agency decisions, either by ratification or intervening during the rulemaking process, or any number of examples where the legislature is set up constitutionally to check what agencies are doing. More specifically, I'd refer to the history of this issue and wolves. Number one, the idea that the legislature has not been involved in the listing of species at all fails to recognize, and it's within the Wolf Plan, how the Endangered Species Act in Oregon came to be. It was enacted in 1987, and when it was enacted, incorporated therein all of the species that were listed federally. So by acting, the legislature actually did the original listing. I've also just been notified, and we're happy to follow up on this, that, and I don't have confirmation of this yet, but we'll share with your offices, that the Aleutian Canadian goose has actually been statutory delisted. So there may be some precedent, and I will acknowledge not being a part of that discussion. It may not have been as passionate as some livestock, wolves, and conservation. But to say it's completely and wholly unprecedented, I don't think is a totally accurate characterization. So in closing, before letting them talk about the substance and honoring the distance that they've traveled, we would say the cattlemen are asking you to consider the decade and a half long work that's been done on this bill, the risks, not only the upside, what the opponents believe the appellate process can bring, but what the risk of that means to not only the stakeholder process, but potentially holding up and how that can involve settlement of other issues. And we've certainly seen that in the past with the Wolf Plan. So we thank you for carefully considering this and asking those questions, and hopefully that was a straightforward answer that at least gives you our perspective on what we think the effect of this bill will be.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Chairman Edwards, committee members, I'm John O'Keefe, president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I speak here on behalf of the livestock industry and especially on behalf of those members we have up there in northeastern Oregon where there's lots of wolves and lots of issues. You'd be better served if some of them could be here to speak to you, but a short notice of the hearing and the duties at home put me here in their stead. We did submit written testimony from them, and that'll be available for you. Our members are the ones that are out on the ground. They truly have skin in the game. These are economic issues, but more than that, you spend your life taking care of livestock. When it comes to a violent end, that bothers you. And we know we have to coexist with wolves, but we need the tools to do that, and keeping the plan moving is integral to that. We support House Bill 4040. We would like the legislator to ratify the commission's decision. We feel that this decision scientifically supports delisting. It ensures appropriate management to go forward, working to prevent or at least minimize conflict with livestock and domestic animals. Our members have participated in the Wolf Plan. They have complied with it. They've helped craft it. We've worked with it for over a decade. We've worked closely with the Fish and Wildlife Service to strike a balance for ranchers. We believe the commission's decision is well-reasoned. It is supported by science, and it's based on the five criteria listed by statute. There are significant gray wolf numbers in Oregon. Please keep in mind, out on the ground, wolf populations will continue to grow. We've seen the graph. We've seen what's happened in the other states that are years ahead of us in wolf management. These conflicts will go on. We need the plan to go on. We need to get into stage three. The nature of courts, the management plan could be halted for years. I do understand legislators are hesitant to get into the realm of science, but please realize courts are as well. Courts rule on process. A discussion of process can go on for a long time. Our producers are going to be faced with these issues every day. The wolves are there. I would like to say OCA would disagree that 4040 undermines collaboration. 4040 is here to support the plan and keep the plan moving forward. We do feel, however, that litigation does tend to undermine the collaborative spirit of the Wolf Plan. Thank you for this opportunity to address the committee.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I'm Nathan Jackson, a rancher in Douglas and Jackson counties, where we raise stalker cattle, hay, and grain. My wife's family also ranches in Klamath County, raising mother cows. As a young livestock producer and father, I am concerned about my future ability to manage my herds and operations in the face of ever-expanding wolf populations. The Oregon Wolf Conservation and Management Plan is a plan that all stakeholders agreed upon for the management of wolves in Oregon. This plan, while not providing certainty for cattlemen, does provide a roadmap we can all follow and that we have all agreed upon to lead us in the future of wolves in Oregon. HB 4040A does not remove any current protections for wolves under the law. HB 4040A does not legalize hunting or killing of wolves, nor make any changes to the wolf plan. 4040A does not restrict ODF&W from future decisions to list the wolf as endangered under Oregon's Endangered Species Act. And finally, the bill does not violate any constitutional checks and balances or circumvent any rights stakeholders have to proceed with current legal actions. I urge the Senate to stand behind the science and data that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife have provided and approve HB 4040A. Thank you.
Thank you, each. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you very much. Just to put it in perspective, Mr. O'Keefe, how far is it from Adel to Salem?
It's about 380 miles.
And you're here because you're a lot closer than the other livestock producers to would otherwise be here to protect their livelihood.
Well, I'm here. I'm a little bit closer. I've got a capable boy at home that allows me to attend these things, and it's my turn. I've watched a lot of guys step up and support this industry, and it's my turn now.
Yep. And a follow-up question. We heard earlier about the compensation of ranchers for their predation on livestock. I wonder if you could put a little perspective onto the actual amount of death loss and how you go about proving it, the difficulty of it, an injury, as compared to the losses that livestock producers have from loss of efficient utilization of forage, loss of reproduction capacity, and loss of gain?
Well, I don't have specific numbers here. I wish our wolf chair could have made it here. I do know those are all serious issues. As far as death loss is concerned, in the state of Wyoming, if you confirm one, you get paid for seven. And there are lots of producers. Mr. Anderson from Idaho, it's been working with wolves for a long time, feels that the death loss is a smaller issue. The loss of reproductiveness, the inability to use your rangeland appropriately because the cattle don't disperse, some of those are even bigger issues than the death loss. I'm sorry I didn't come with specific numbers. I can certainly provide those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A comment. You know, Representative Whitson grew up in Montana along the Beaverhead River, and this year there had a lot of snow, and for the first time ever, the elk herds are down in the valley floor mingling with wolves. Your ability to use your rangeland, it doesn't make any difference if you turn the cows out at the top of the range. If the wolves run them down, they're not going back. There's wolves up there. I'll leave it at that.
Absolutely.
Senator Brzozinski.
Yeah, thank you. Gentlemen, John and Nathan, thank you all very much for coming here. I know that the distance that you had to travel to get here to give us your perspective is very important for us to have that information to go forward. I think I want to address my questions to Rocky, though, since you're in the building, you know how things have worked, instead of asking John or Nathan to try to respond. I looked at the language here and getting beyond the whereas on 4040 and just getting down to section 1, I find when I read the section where it says on line 6 and 7 talking about, it's actually on 7, it says basically that the actions by the commission back on November 9th, and it says, is ratified as satisfying the elements of RS 496.176 and approved. My reading of that tells me that the legislature are being asked to basically superimpose our decision over the top of what was done by the commission, and it actually puts in position that we're saying that all this has been done, and it doesn't matter. I mean, everyone wants science to lead the way here, and if it was done right, why are we worried about letting the court say, guess what, the commission did exactly what they're supposed to, they followed the plan, and if they didn't, then it doesn't seem like we should be trying to ratify something that was inappropriately done.
Chair Edwards, Senator Brzozinski, to answer this question probably most head-on, to be frank about this and to talk about precedent, is I think you have to look at not just the appellate procedure but the history of these issues and where they end up. And that's why it's so important, Mr. O'Keefe's testimony about when we see the credibility of the stakeholder process. When private parties file that appeal against the department, it opens up settlement discussions between those private parties and the department that the entire stakeholder group isn't privy to or may not have access to. And I think I want to say, in an effort of good faith, to put that on the record and say that is one of the concerns. And what we're asking is that the legislature take a close look at this, who has its thumb over the department, who has all sorts of levers in our system to discuss with the department and say, have we looked at this efficiently? Have we looked at it? Have we analyzed? Did they get it right? And if we ratify that, then yes, it has an effect on that case. But I will say that the cattlemen, based on prior experience with the Wolf Plan, are probably justifiably so concerned about what the appellate process means for stakeholders and the entire credibility of the Wolf Plan. And that means that even though the delisting decision may be at issue in the case, the leverage points on revisiting the Wolf Plan are open for discussion. And frankly, we did see that after the Mnaha Pact depredation in 2010 and the ensuing lawsuit. I want to answer that question on behalf of the cattlemen in an honest and frank way to say that these concerns aren't simply about patting the department on the back. They're about a stakeholder process and whether that stays within the province of the legislature and the agency, or whether that's handed off to the court and a very few limited number of special interest groups. And that, I think, would be our response.
And if I can follow up. So, Rocky, let me ask this then. I understand that, and I take that as the premise as how it should be done. Can you tell me, because I don't know, but how many work groups, how many meetings have occurred since this decision by the commission where the players who are part of this process that worked on the work plan have actually met and discussed those ramifications of that decision? And how much, and that's question one. Second question is, how many work groups have we, the legislature, had to actually air this out to determine whether or not we believe that they have actually successfully done what they're supposed to, since we're not, quote unquote, the certified smart individuals who are supposed to be making certain that they cross their T's, dotted the I's, as required under the plan that was agreed upon mutually. And that's what I'm trying to figure out is, how do we know better than the court or anyone else if we haven't even had that dialogue? It seems like maybe this is a great interim project for us to work on and come back in 17 and be able to say as a legislature, guess what? We've looked at this, and yes, they did successfully do the review.
Chair Edwards, Senator Pozanski, we would be willing to go back, and I know it came up during ODF&W's presentation, to look at all of the comments and the discussions and the times that that essentially this was done by rule, the public process that has happened, because I know the comment has come up throughout this hearing about public process and due process and quote-unquote letting the process work. We've had that process from ODF&W, and we're happy to share with you and going back to 2005 or even back to 1999 when wolves first arrived in Oregon, and talk about how that stakeholder process has started, and you heard that testimony. As far as the gray space where people have met in the interim to talk about the suit, I would say that there isn't a record of a public process, because that public process is the agency process. But I would ask, or at least pose for the committee to consider, the same question about the intervening lawsuits, whether or not the stakeholders were all brought in together to talk about the science and the issues that have been raised by the opponents, because that is, I think, essentially the claim that all of us are making, that the stakeholder process isn't being respected, and how do we find that? How do we find that ground? So appreciate the question, and I hope that answers it to some degree.
If I can just follow up one more. So I appreciate the answer, because it does part of the way, but I still haven't heard, how are we, in this point, this flash in time, able to make this decision without us having that dialogue within ourselves to basically take the legislative process and supersede or superimpose whether or not they've met the criteria that's in the statute? And that's, to me, where if we had had a work group that sat us out and we could actually see everything, then I feel that we would be in a position to say, yes, they did, or no, they didn't, not knowing how it's going to turn out. But it seems to me we're rushing to try to get something done, and I understand why some people think that we should do that, but it seems to me that you've got a lot of people that were actively in this group that were collaboratively working together, and if we supersede our position over what was supposed to be this process for this to occur, have we not somehow violated that trust and that agreement as well?
Chair Edwards, Senator Pozanski, understand that concern, and our concern as the cattlemen and our partners in the livestock industry would mirror those exact same concerns with the appellate process. So I don't think it answers your question, but that's why we think this is a policy choice on whether we hand it over to the courts, who we believe have the exact same issues on how they do the scientific analysis. And frankly, again, to have this debate in a public forum to say, we also have some questions about good faith and whether or not the litigation or the appeal that's been filed is really about the science or if it's about settlement negotiations. And I think it's important that we say that, and that's our concern. So,
Senator Denbrough, then Senator Whitsitt.
Rocky, just to follow up a little more. The question becomes, when do we use this tool of having the legislature intervene on an agency decision or a commission decision that could potentially lead to a lawsuit or that involves a lawsuit? I mean, what is unique about this situation? Because I'm sure you would not say that that the legislature should take action as a rule or even frequently in this kind of thing. So why this? What is the urgency? What is so special about this case that would cause us to do this and potentially create a precedent, you know, to make this our ongoing process? Because it is, as you can detect from what I said before and now, it's kind of troubling to me for the legislature to get involved in this kind of thing.
Chair Edwards, Senator Denbrough, I think that just by the nature of this issue, you see that this issue in and of itself is unique. And there's a lot of components that, you know, either scientifically or politically, which the two seem to be married, are unique. We're dealing with a situation where an apex predator has reintroduced itself, or the circumstances throughout the West have forced an apex predator to reintroduce itself, which is very different than some of the species of fish or other things that we see. And I don't want to walk into the scientific discussion, but I think it's important from a policy aspect to not just say it's unprecedented, but actually say this is a very unique scenario, and to go on beyond just what it means for the wolf, to say that there are very real risks here and burdens that have been placed on livestock producers around the state that they've carried for 10 or 15 years. And at the same time, we see the ODF&W data that they very carefully pored over before making this decision, knowing that that agency is also subject to its own political oversight, not just the legislature, but the appointment by the governor, and have taken this same process. And at some point, it is a matter of public discourse to say, what are the risks to not only conservation, but to management and the producers who are out there, and does the legislature want to take that issue up? So I think to say it's unique simply because this is one species, and if it's, I have the site now, it's right there in 496.172, the Aleutian Canadian goose, and without speculating on that, this is a unique situation because of the unique burdens that it places on the landowners and the unique characteristics of an apex predator as opposed to other species. And I think that's unique, and it does require careful consideration about the balances, the risks, and the burdens that are placed on the stakeholders.
Senator Woodsett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Edwards. Chair Edwards, this is not without precedent. I mean, we do this with land use all the time. But it isn't a matter of us superimposing or agreeing with. It's a matter of we actually enact laws that override court decisions and state goals. And, you know, for instance, placing solar farms on EFU land. I mean, there's one for you. So the question, I guess, comes to Mr. Dellum. Are we... Is it superimposition or is it agreeing with? I mean, ODF&W scientists have made their decision based on science. The legislature is elected by the people to represent them. And in this situation, it seems to me that by passing this law, we would simply be agreeing with the opinion already made by ODF&W scientists. I don't see that where the legislature is superimposing anything.
Chair Edwards, Senator Woodsett, I think that's a well-made point about this being a difference between ratification and disagreeing, but we appreciate the point.
Okay. Thank you, H. We're going to go, we have one more panel and then one individual that's come from more than 100 miles, and we're going to call it for the evening, and we'll carry it over to Thursday, the rest of the folks. So I had previously... I think I'd said Scott Beckstead, Nick Cady, and Lena Spadassier. I don't know if I said that right. Sorry if I didn't. And then Peggy Brown would be the last person up for this evening. And paper, scissors.
Thank you. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States, here today to oppose House Bill 4040. The HSUS is not a party to this lawsuit, but we are deeply concerned by what the bill could represent. And I want to talk a little bit about the animal welfare concerns we have because we are an animal welfare organization. We oppose House Bill 4040 because we believe that it sets the wrong tone and sets Oregon on the wrong path with wolves. We look at what other states have done with wolves and how wolves are regarded and what they are being subjected to in other states. Aerial gunning, steel-jawed leg-hold traps, packs of dogs, as well as some elements among wolf hunters where the normal rules of ethical hunting are completely ignored. In fact, there was even a state senator in Idaho who proposed a bill that would have allowed hunters to use pet dogs as live bait. And then, you know, the wolf would be shot as it's attacking the pet dog that's been tethered out in the woods. Almost a race to the bottom in terms of, you know, how you can kill these creatures. And we don't want to see that happen here in Oregon. We don't believe that that's consistent with Oregon values. Oregonians have a very strong ethic about protecting animals from mistreatment. And again, we believe that House Bill 4040 just sets the wrong tone and sends the state of Oregon in the wrong direction. And so that's my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Hi.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards and the members of the commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Lena Spadicini, and I'm with Oregon Wild. Many concerns surround HB 4040, as we know we've heard today, but with respect to time and concise testimonies today, I'd like to speak directly to the science and delisting process as required by the Endangered Species Act. This has been hit, so I'll make this brief, but I think to this point is where the precedent setting is where the real concern lies. HB 4040, as written, endangers the very process we all rely on to confidently and successfully manage and the rehabilitation of threatened and endangered species within the state. Under Oregon law, any delisting rule, quote, shall be based on documented and verifiable scientific information about the species' biological status. Here, verifiable science has a very specific and measurable definition under the terms of the agency's own rules. Verifiable is defined as a scientific information reviewed by a scientific peer panel of outside experts. This is the crux of the issue and where the precedent setting can be of real concern. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has not demonstrated that their recommendation to delist the gray wolf met the requirements of verifiable scientific information during the delisting process. And in fact, one of the two dissenting votes by the commission in November to not delist was predicated on the failure to demonstrate concurrence with the law and best available science. Oregon Wild and its partners sought a judicial review of the delisting process following the commission's 4-2 vote. It seeks to ensure that a lawful, independent review of peer-reviewed science was completed and ensure that the scientific process for delisting species remains robust and verifiable. Also noted, HB 4040, as written, threatens to intervene in an ongoing judicial review and has the potential to set a new low bar for how little to no verifiable science information is required to meet the delisting requirements. This is the precedence that is most concerning. HB 4040 also seeks to use the legislature to override existing scientific and legal requirements for wildlife management by including the language, and has been noted already by my colleagues. Oregon is unique in its ability to forge agreements among stakeholders and manage a controversial species under the current Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. Back in 2013, my organization worked with other stakeholders, including the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, to craft an historic settlement agreement over the wolf management. And we brought it before the committee for support from the Senate. That consensus-driven agreement has been a model for the nation, reducing conflicts between wolves and livestock through non-lethal means, all the while the wolf population has slowly increased. For the successful model to continue, it is crucial that the Oregon wildlife management decisions continue to be based on the best available and verifiable science by the law. For these reasons, HB 4040 should be rejected. Thank you.
Thank you. Nick.
Chair Edwards and committee members, my name is Nick Cady. I'm the legal director of Cascadia Wildlands. I hopefully can answer a lot of your questions. I'm the attorney of record on the legal challenge to the wolf delisting, and I was also attorney of record on the 2013 settlement case that set forth the phases and kind of clarified a lot of the provisions that existed in the wolf plan. Before I jump into answering any questions you may have, I wanted to make three just brief points. I can also explain why we filed the lawsuit, if that's beneficial as well. But first, just to kind of address some issues that have been kind of being dodged, the listing status has no effect on whether killing wolves, on the department's ability to kill wolves in response to depredations. As part of the 2013 settlement, we passed a law that basically exempts wolves, killing wolves in response to depredation. What we're concerned about with, and partly why we filed that lawsuit, is killing wolves as part of organized hunts that's authorized in phase three in response to declining deer or elk numbers, which we don't think is biologically or scientifically a responsible or reasonable thing to do. Second, litigation, maybe this is just my biased view as an attorney, but litigation has been unfairly portrayed as inconsistent or kind of some outside process, but judicial review of agency decisions is a common and accepted process in administrative law. And it basically ensures that agencies are following the legal guidelines that are provided by the legislature. And this is a process in the past that all parties testifying here today have been involved in and will continue to be involved in the future. The Oregon Cattlemen were a signer on, were a party to the 2013 settlement, and the Farm Bureau and the Oregon Cattlemen's Association have indicated that they will intervene in our most recent lawsuit as well. So they will be involved in this process in one way or another in the future. And just as a final point for why we brought this lawsuit, and it kind of expands on Lena's discussion of peer review, but our vision for how this would go forward, and aside from kind of semantics on preclusion of judicial review or whatever, is that if the commission and if the department would have put this decision in front of a panel of peer review scientists, no party in this room could have argued it. It would have bulletproofed their path forward, and this is still available to them as a path forward. It would force the withdrawal of our lawsuit, and it would allow them to move forward, and the peer review panel could lay forth kind of clear guidelines on when wolves would be recovered and kind of have a clear symbol or way for the department to move forward without litigation, without further legislation. And you know, wolves, I don't think anybody in this room is going to dispute that wolves are recovering or in that process. I think everybody agrees. This is an ongoing wildlife success story, and I think the way that we get to celebrating this instead of continuing to fight over it is through a scientific peer review process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for the direct nature of your testimony. Okay. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
On both sides. Dancing around issues that we all know what's going on. Senator Whitsitt.
I just heard Mr. Beckstead. I find the dichotomy fascinating. Wolves kill by biting in the hindquarters, biting in the flanks, tearing and ripping until the animal's no longer able to stand. And they don't very often kill the animal before they begin devouring. They begin to eat them up from their genitals and their udder and ripping open their gut and so forth while they're alive. Now, this is nature's way, but it's hardly humane.
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, I appreciate that. We raised cattle growing up in southern Idaho, and it was always hard to lose an animal, regardless of how it was lost. And so I guess I would draw a distinction between someone who clearly gets pleasure out of killing these animals in ways that are cruel versus an animal that is killing to survive. That would be my response.
Senator Przanski.
Yeah. So let me just follow up on the lawsuit. My understanding from what I just heard is that the reason it was brought forward and looking at what the criteria, what the procedure was supposed to be for whether or not there was a delisting wasn't followed, at least in your opinion, and that all it would take for, let's say, it to go away and to find out, you know, whether there was a scientific base for the delisting was to have this independent peer review, which I assume was part of the process that was called for in the plan itself?
Yes, and it's something we specifically pointed out many, many times to the department during the delisting process, which was probably about a year long. I think probably four or five different letters we harped on that legal requirement.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
May I also offer for the record, in addition to Nick's testimony about the other scientists, if there were a peer review, there are about 25 who submitted comments, pretty robust ones about why the delisting was a wrong-headed decision. And for the record, I'd like to submit the Register Guard most recent op-ed by one of those scientists. So I will make sure to circulate those to you today.
And if I could make one final point, I forgot to bring this up. We've talked a lot about if there's been any prior examples of this happening before. In my legal research on issues surrounding this, the Washington ground squirrel was listed by the department, and I don't know what year this was from. But a few counties objected to the department's listing of the Washington ground squirrel, and so they went to court, and the court ultimately resolved that the department had satisfied the different scientific criteria that were laid out in the statute. There was no legislation involved in that process.
Thank you.
Thank you each. And our final person for the evening will be Peggy Brown.
Mr. Chair, I would like to see Shannon's here from ODFW before she leaves. There's a question that I have based on what we just heard.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Chairman Edwards, committee members, my name is Peggy Brown, and I'm a rancher and farmer from Union and Baker Counties in Eastern Oregon, and a member of the Baker County Farm Bureau Board. So I've been at least involved at a distance in watching this process since it began in 2003, and knowing that individual landowners, land managers, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, members of associations and associations themselves have all been involved in this very difficult and tumultuous process. We know by testimony and by history that the first wolf crossed the border in about 1998, and the plan was then adopted in 2005. In Baker County, we have a producer that actually sits on our board whose wolves came in and killed numerous sheep that they own, and they've had to go through that. And that was not very long ago, I think 2 or 3 years probably. We also know that there's more than 100 wolves in the state today, and so obviously this plan is working. To the point of science that has been continuously discussed here today, I think that what we have to remember is that we all entered into this agreement, the producers, the environmental groups, the legislators, that we have agreed to believe or have faith in the ODFNW science. That's who we've put our faith behind, maybe begrudgingly, but that is who has had that charge. To that point, even more, as a producer, a livestock producer, I have not been allowed to even be able to identify a wolf on my own property. That has to be validated by ODFNW biologists. Those wolves have extremely large ranges. They're very reclusive. And what we see in other states corroborates the fact that there probably are far more than 100 in the state currently. The wolf population is present and growing. The ODFNW Commission found delisting factors were met and that the plan is effective to achieve its goal and recover the population. Our members, the landowners in Eastern Oregon, still believe that a firm handshake and that looking somebody in the eye, making eye contact while they make that handshake, really means something. In fact, in many cases, they feel like that means a lot more than a binding legal contract. And this process and the plan is both a handshake with the eye contact, and a legal contract. So I urge you to support House Bill 4040 and this wolf management plan because it does keep the plan on track, and because above all, it reaffirms the stakeholder process. That is what we're asking you to do today. Again, I implore you to honor these commitments and to ratify the delisting decision. And thank you for taking the time to listen to the testimony.
Thanks for making the drive to be here. Questions? Okay, thank you. If we could get the department to come back forward, I think at least Senator Brzozinski has a question or two.
Thank you for coming back up. Based on the testimony we previously just heard as to maybe the reason why this lawsuit was actually filed, it seems imperative that I ask the question whether or not this was in fact brought to the agency's attention, that there are people who are part of this group that didn't think that the procedures followed as to having an independent peer review as required under the managed plan. So I guess my questions are going to be focused and centered around that. That's one. Is that true that it is post, that is part of the procedure or process that's required under the plan? Two, if it was, did it in fact occur? And three, if it didn't, why didn't it? And we'll see where we go from there.
Okay, thank you. Chair Edwards, Senator Brzezinski, we do feel we followed the law and the requirements in the plan to have peer review. We felt like we were doing it throughout the public process. And so in creating that biological assessment, there's certainly a model developed basically looking at the trajectory of the species and establishing whether we meet those five criteria. And so we did have scientists review that model and the outcomes. And in addition to that, we had the doctor who developed the model actually look at it and make sure our assumptions were met. And the feedback we got on that was that, yes, your science is good. Do you want to add to that?
Well, I think that's great.
Okay.
I'll just follow up. So the scientists who reviewed it were outside the agency. Where did they come from?
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, I cannot remember the exact people on the list. They certainly were outside the agency. Most of them were affiliated with universities and those kind of things around the nation. They weren't just in Oregon. They were in Minnesota and other places. Do you remember more specifically?
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, don't remember the exact, what state those were from. Most of them were from, were academics that reviewed that. So as part of the verifiable science piece that Shannon mentioned, that's part of the process as well as peer review, is to make sure that the modeling you're using is repeatable, sound science. So that's the verifiable component, which is why we went back to the modeler to make sure that the assumptions that we had put in were appropriate to that model. And then the results, the model results, all that was part of the public record for review by all the constituents, the public, and the commission as well.
So just to follow up, so that's all up on the commission web page. Feedback from the scientific panel.
Yeah, the reviews.
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, it is, but like I mentioned, we have a huge volume of information up there, so we could pull it out if it's easier. Otherwise, it is in our archived minutes from November 2015.
Mr. Chair,
yeah,
I would ask you to please make that available, that information available to the committee, the education and the qualifications of those who peer reviewed and what that peer review process was like.
Chair Edwards, Senator Whitsitt, you can make that happen. Chair Edwards, do you want us to discuss Aleutian Canadian goose at all? That seems to be
coming. I'm not particularly interested in it, but if any of the members do, I don't think so. Okay.
I'm hungry.
Thank you. Yes, am I. Thank you both for being here. Thank you, everybody, for your heartfelt testimony on both sides of the issue. We are going to be reposting this for Thursday. And so with that, it's a reposting. It's not a carryover, right? Okay. So we're going to close then the public hearing on House Bill 4040A. It will be posted for Thursday. And I'll hold any comments till the next hearing. We're adjourned. Still the next hearing. We're adjourned.